Every now and then, we ought to go back and remember from whence the Lord has brought us. There used to be a time where that type of singing was the norm of our experience. And it just doesn't fit into a hymnal. It won't fit on a PowerPoint presentation if it's not in your soul. It takes less than one generation for us to lose our song. And it has been too powerful in our experience for us to forget it so quickly. There's a word for us in the book of Micah, Micah chapter 6, verse 8. Micah chapter 6, verse 8, minor prophet book, Micah chapter 6, verse 8. The word of God says, He has showed you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. From that text, I want to call this sermon today God's pre-election requirements. God's pre-election requirements. Here we are, within 48 hours of an opportunity to cast the early vote in perhaps one of the more significant elections of recent memory. And everybody has something to say. President Obama has his agenda, his platform, his stump speeches. Candidate Romney has his platform, his agenda, his stump speeches. The Democrats have their requirements and expectations. The Republicans have theirs. Independent voice is not as loud, but they have the things that they're pulling for. Organized labor, and you name it, everybody has a dog in this fight. But the preacher's task is not to come and articulate the Democrat nor the Republican platform, but to remind the people of God, at least, what does God require as this election sneaks up upon us? It is not the first time the people of God has been close to making a life-changing decision. The book of Micah, do not let its small size fool you, is packed with relevant information for times like these. In spite of the religious institution of that day doing fairly well, that is, people would go and get their worship on, the people would bring their sacrifices, and I'm sure that they had a jubilant time. But outside of the worship experience, injustice was becoming the norm. And God was displeased with what was going on in the house because of the apathy they had for what was going on outside of the house. That is, they could not sing away God's disappointment with the lack of justice in the community. And God surely was not pleased with how well they looked with their foot on the neck of their own brothers and sisters. You see, Israel's greatest crime and oppression perhaps was not experienced by outsiders. Babylon's oppression was bad, but it did not last as long as Israel's self-imposed injustice. The classism of the day created rampant injustice throughout this land And God raised the preacher Micah to raise that rhetorical question, what does God require of his people? And the answer could not be laid out any more plainly. This is what God requires. He wants his people to act justly. King James says, do justly, and to love mercy, and to do all of this by walking humbly with your God. I think that still preaches to us today. What does God require 48 hours before early voting starts? This is it: to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk with God. That's the thesis we should work on: acting justly, loving mercy, and walking with God. Acting justly. I want to start here and make sure you and I are clear about the fact that God is concerned with justice. He's not just concerned with how we look in the church house. He's not just concerned with song service. He's not just concerned with us being churchified on Sunday morning, but he is concerned with justice. To show you I didn't make it up, let's look at several passages of scripture. The first one is Exodus chapter 23, verse 6 and 7. Exodus 23, verse 6 and 7. God says, do not deny justice to your poor. And you know, sometimes God will remind us that the poor belong to us because we so easily want to disown them and just call them the poor or their poor. But the Lord said, no, it's your poor. Do not deny your poor people in their lawsuits. It says, have nothing to do with a false charge, and do not put an innocent or honest person to death, for I will not acquit the guilty. Now that's serious language, non-churchy language. This is more of the judicial situation here. This is courtroom stuff here. God is not acquitting, but God then pictures himself as judge. He says, if I find out that you are guilty of injustice, guilty of putting innocent and honest people to death, he says, there's no need of you crying out for mercy to me. I will not acquit the guilty. He said, I'm a God of justice. Then Psalms 11, verse 7 says, for the Lord is righteous. And then listen to this phrase. He loves justice. Upright men will see his face. He loves justice. This is a powerful expression. He never says, I love whooping and hollering. He never says, I love how fancy you dress on Sunday. But he does say he loves justice. I'm going somewhere with this. Keep walking with me. God is a God of justice. Then Psalms 89, verse 14 says, righteousness and justice, there it is again, are the foundation of your throne. I mean, everything else is built upon it. Love and faithfulness go before you. And then finally, and a more popular text, is Amos chapter 5, verse 24. Amos 5, 24 says, but let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Do you see that God is a God of justice? Now, if we claim that we are people of God and God is concerned with justice, can you see the inconsistency when we, the supposed people of God, are apathetic, indifferent, don't care about the injustice of our day? The very fact that we claim to be people of God means whether we are inclined or not, we are duty-bound to be people of justice because we have a God of justice. Are y'all walking with me? Now, if you're not careful, you will go home and enjoy your refrigerator full of food, In the comfort of your easy boy chair, as you prepare to watch football games, and if it gets too hot, you'll turn on your air, and if it gets too cold, you turn on your heat, and you go back to the comfort of your home, and you can almost ignore how rampant injustice is today. You don't have to go back to no 60s to find injustice right here today. With the game getting ready to come on, it's some injustice going on. And so let me help you middle class folks see it. First of all, you are aware that as I tell my little Bible story, there's over 1 million black men locked up in jail. These are not on probation or parole. There's 1 million black men locked up behind prison walls right now. You ought to ask yourself, what's up with this? Because you do realize that the African American population makes up roughly 12% of the American population. Put all Americans together, pull the black folk out, that's only about 12% of the big pie. Put all the black folk over here, and about half of those are male, the other half are female. That means then black men only make up 6% of the American population. But we make up over 50% of the prison population. You don't have to be a social scientist to see something wrong with this math. How does such a small faction, not even a tithe of the U.S. situation, make up over half, a majority of the prison population? Are we really that much more criminally inclined without owning one gun shop? Without owning one gun manufacturing shop, are we really that much more criminally inclined? Without owning any airplanes to fly drugs in to our community, are we really that much more criminally inclined? Or do I smell injustice in the air? Then, our sisters, as hardworking as they are, still lead to many negative health indicators. Too many of our sisters are still HIV positive, and because of lack of insurance and health care, die a terrible death because they can't afford the cocktail that's used to make things a little more comfortable. Too much abuse, too much underpayment and overwork of our sisters. Not only that, but our children too oft times go to schools with inferior education processes. Now that would be bad any day of the week, but it's extra bad in light of an information age economy. It was bad for our children to go to inferior schools when we had an agrarian economy, farm economy. It was bad when we had an industrial economy working in the plants. But it's even worse in an information economy. These kids who cannot read, cannot write, cannot do mathematics, don't know how to turn the computer on, let alone surf the net, are on their way to prison or an early grave. Because what do you do with a kid that becomes a man but can't get a job, but want breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but can't get a job? Charity has run out. You do what you gotta do. And oftentimes it turns into a criminal element that results in them being downright thuggish or incarcerated or dead. Therefore, when we talk about education, it's not just an us versus them situation. Education is a justice issue. You heard that marvelous poetic phrase. I think children still say it. It'd be nice if they do. I don't know if they say it or not, but we used to say it. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and just, there's that word again, justice for all. It's not just for us to have inferior education for so many of our children. There is on this ballot the renewal levy for our schools. And even that raises a justice question. When was the last time y'all heard of a prison levy? When was the last time you ever heard of a prison levy? We got to get together and put yard signs out because the prison system needs some more money and we need you to go vote yes for the prison. When was the last time y'all heard of a prison levy? Y'all ain't never voted on no prison levy because we find money for prison. We don't just remodel the prison. We know how to build spank brand new prisons, state of the art prison. We got money to build stadiums and prisons. But can't find money for sports and music and drama and all of the extra stuff that oftentimes serve as side doors to the educational situation. There are some kids, mama gonna make you get your lesson out. There are other kids don't know where mama at. And so the only reason that boy is trying to get his lesson out is because he want to play football. And you can't play football if you flunk in the class. So the boy sit down and get his lesson out because he want to go play football. Can you see football becomes a side door into education? Well, we shutting the side doors when we don't pass the levy. And then you can't keep asking folk who are taxed on top of tax on top of tax to keep passing the tax. But when you don't pass the test and the kid can't read, instead of paying for education, now you got to pay for incarceration in one of the richest nations in the world. These are justice issues. And why is the preacher talking about it? Because God loves justice. The flip side of that coin is he hates injustice. And then our seniors, men, women, or young people, have a monopoly on injustice. Our seniors, many have worked all of their life thinking that at the end they would have the golden years, assuming there would be some gold coming from somewhere. Surely they assume that the little gold they've collected in their career would not have to be spent on something like health care. Because after all, for over 40, sometimes 50 years on your check, you've been paying FICA and Medicaid and some of everything all along the journey. So you knew it was going to be costly, but you figured that you had paid into it, so whatever it is, I'm good because I've paid my dues for decades. Thus, for us to get to 2012 and to even have a discussion of what shall we do, with Social Security? What shall we do with Medicaid? It is an unjust discussion among those who pay. Now, if you just want to have a theoretical discussion, come back down here to elementary school. Talk to the second graders about shall we have Social Security when you become seniors. But you can't have a discussion with somebody that's already 75 years old talking about what shall we do with Social Security, what shall we do with Medicare. After you already got my money, we shall do what you said you was going to do. I paid for decades. There's no discussion on what you're going to do with my money, and my time is gone. These are justice issues. And you can't be so holy, so concerned with heaven, that you miss out on this justice stuff. Because God is a God of justice. So when we turn on the television and see what we've labeled as immigrants sneaking over the border, it smells like a justice issue. Isn't that interesting that we have TV series, War at the Border, night after night, we taking pictures of Jose and them coming over the border. The cameraman seeing Mexicans every day coming over the border. This is not just a one-shot documentary. They got so much footage that they got a whole episode, War at the Border. But yet, you let a boatload of Haitians, Wesley Snipes looking Haitians, try to bring yourself up here to this Gulf Coast, and if the boat flip over, the Coast Guard don't even go help them. Say, you shouldn't have been trying to get up in here. This is a justice issue. What do you do with over a million people already living in your country that have babies in your country, have worked in your country? Do you deport them back? Do you keep them? How do you work this matter out? These are justice questions. Perhaps we need to revisit this discussion of immigration, because it sounds kind of strange when an immigrant, a former immigrant, let's say that, that's nicer. When a former immigrant tries to slam the door on immigration. I know some of us did not do very well in history, namely me. My passion for history grew as a grown man in seminary. I hated history as a kid, but I do remember this. Christopher Columbus got lost. Now, I may have missed a whole lot, but I woke up when they told me that part there. These are not Indians around here, because this is not India, Mr. Columbus. You do know America did not used to be right next to England. It wasn't a great earthquake and then America floated over here. America always been over here. The way all these Europeans got over here is because they came across the Atlantic Ocean and massacred the Native Americans. So hostile immigrants came over here, killed the folk who was living here, and now slammed the door behind those coming behind them. These sound like justice issues. Yeah. And then you've heard about the war on terrorism, and I would just caution us about how we define our terms, because sometimes our definitions can come back and slap us in the face. What is terrorism again? Is terrorism murdering people? Is terrorism unauthorized murder of people? So if you have orders to kill from a recognized national leader, that's not murder, that's war. But if you just run out and do it on your own without orders, what about a covert operation? Is that terrorism? What about when you drop the bomb and not only do you kill your target, but you kill innocent bystanders around there? Is that terrorism? What do you, how do you describe that to mama who's crying about her only son and her husband that got killed for being in the wrong place? Well, what place was they in? They were at work. You might want to be careful about how you label the terrorist. That definition might come around and slap you in the face. And then even this gay marriage smell like some justice stuff. I am the first to say, I ain't running for nothing. I ain't seeking no office. I'm the first one to tell you, put this on YouTube. I think it's wrong for Leroy and John to be laying they behind up in bed talking about, I love you. That's wrong. I think that's morally wrong. You ought to have enough sense to see something wrong with that. However, this is our country. And we strongly believe that it's wrong to have taxation without representation. That you can't take my taxes and then tell me I don't have rights. If I don't have rights, then you ought to give me a refund on my taxes and stop taking money from me. So when it comes down to gay marriage, it's not a theological issue. It becomes, what you gonna do with the taxes? So if you're so upset about this person's bed partner, give them back their money. But you can't take their money and then tell them they don't have rights. That's called taxation without representation. That's what we marched on the capital of this country for, because our taxes was being taken. But when it was time for us to exercise our right, they said, you don't have a right, even though you're gonna pay taxes. And so I understand my brother, president, in his issue. I elected him to be my president, not my pastor. It's a justice matter. Now, the Lord, in Micah chapter 6, verse 8, does not say, I want you to just know about justice. He said, I want you to do justice. I want you to act justly. I want you to be involved with justice work. Well, what does that look like? Well, you can start with being a just, a fair, a righteous individual. That would be a marvelous start for so many of our children. Just raising our children in the right way. But at some point in the discussion, as I try to move along, you run into a fork in the road. There are some who take the legal reform path, as our beloved NAACP has done, and it takes a lot of legs and a lot of tenacity to stay with that. But thank God for Brown versus Board. If it wasn't for Thurgood Marshall, the NAACP, and people who could take that legal reform, long, winding, twisting road, who knows what the school system would be today. That's good justice work. Or, for those of us who are a little less patient, we might take the Southern Christian Leadership Conference protest route. Let's boycott them. Let's march on them. Let's go down here and picket in front of them. The protest path to justice may be more to your liking. Or it may be the Urban League's path of self-help. Let's stay away from protests. Let's stay away from legal stuff. Let's just learn how to make something. Let's just learn how to be the best business owner that they need, and therefore we will be respected. Not because we protested, not because we went down and fought for the law, but because we make better bricks than anybody else. And you would have to talk to Booker T. Washington and the Tuskegee Institute about this whole discussion of his saying, look, we don't need to be protesting, let's produce. If we learn how to produce in a capitalistic society, we will gain our respect. Whichever path you choose, perhaps we need all of these paths. I oftentimes say America would have never listened to Martin if it wasn't for Malcolm. Some of y'all don't even know what I'm talking about. America would have never listened to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. if it wasn't for a Malcolm X. They were scared of Malcolm X, all right? Malcolm X said, by any means necessary, all right? Y'all need to really come on and read a little bit more, people. But whatever the case, your vote is going to have to be the centerpiece of your justice work. Because when you have the wrong person at the top of the system, you will perpetuate the need for justice work. The wrong joker at the top means you're gonna always be fighting legal reform because they keep pushing bad laws down, and you're gonna have to keep pushing from the bottom saying, no, we don't want these laws. Put the wrong joker at the top of this thing and you'll always be protesting. And how many of y'all know some of us getting too old to be doing all this walking now? Somebody ought to help me here. President Obama came down to Eaton Park, and you know there's something about moving past 40-ish that make you want to know where's the bathroom at when you go into different venues. And so they were saying on the ticket that this thing started around 10 o'clock and he wasn't scheduled to be there till 12 o'clock, and they wanted us to be there at 8 o'clock. So I just had to do some quick math. Oh, that's 4 hours from 8 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Where the bathroom at? And then there's no chairs. Eaton Park don't have no chairs in it. Where we gonna be sitting? No, you gotta stand up from 8 o'clock in the morning to 12 o'clock noon to hear the speech, and then we gotta come back through all this stuff and Birthday said it looks better on TV. Folk running out of energy to protest. This new generation ain't marching nowhere. We trying to get them to exercise. They ain't marching nowhere. And so that crowd that marched in 60, they done ran out. Their legs too bad to be doing much marching. So I don't have high hopes for all this protest stuff. I think it'll work if you got some workers. But you perpetuate the need to protest when you got the wrong person at the top. And then self-help. Perhaps where I'm most optimistic on, it is an endless cycle of helping people who should have came out of high school prepared to go to the next level. Your vote is justice work. But the Lord says not only act justly, he also says to love mercy. Y'all see that in the text? Not only act justly, but to love mercy. Now, we don't have to think long and hard to acknowledge the fact that folk can be so mean and cruel. Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? People are not basically good. We have a sin nature in us. That's why redemption is necessary. And if you're not careful, you will get into this tit-for-tat situation, and you will be mean to those who've been mean to you. You will ignore those who've ignored you. Walter Winks encourages us to make sure we don't become our enemy. Dr. King put it like this: black supremacy is just as bad as white supremacy. The dream was not for blacks to treat whites the way whites treated blacks. The dream was for whites and blacks to get along with one another. God calls us to not only be merciful, not only to be kind, but then he put some stuff in the game. He said, I want you to love being merciful. I don't want you to just be merciful, because you know sometimes you can be merciful, but you do it so grudgingly. The Lord said, I don't want you to just grudgingly be merciful like dog. The Lord had told me to be kind to you, so here I am. I'm going to be kind to you. No, he said, I want you to learn how to love mercy. And mercy must get to economics. Did you hear what I said? It's always interesting to me how you can have a crowd until you get down to this money stuff. I said, mercy got to hit economics. Because after all, what are we talking about if my stomach is still growling? What are we talking about if you drive home and I don't have a home to go to? What are we talking about? You come by here, you sing your little kumbaya song, you say your little prayers, and then you drive in your car back to your house, and I'm trying to find my way back to my apartment. I done ran out of bus fare. I done put that in the plate. I put my bus fare in the plate, and bless God, y'all can't even get me home. Everybody got a car, but ain't nobody going my way. So this mercy stuff, don't run out of energy before you get to economic mercy. And economic mercy got to be deeper than charity. Tell your neighbor, deeper than charity. The goal of mercy is to help people get on their own two feet. It is not to keep passing out fish sandwiches. It's not to keep opening up a soup kitchen. It's not to keep giving a giveaway. It is to help people stand on their own two feet. This mercy work. Got to find a way to help our children get quality education without coming out of school with $100,000 worth of student loan debt. There are too many of our children with an undergraduate degree come out with $50,000 if they want a master's degree so they can make more money. It's not strange for them to have $100,000 worth of student loan debt. This is what they owe on the day of graduation. They don't have no car. They don't have no house. The little bit of clothes, that everything they got is fitting over there in that little dorm room. And before they can start building assets, they got $100,000 mountain of debt accumulating interest in front of them. Mercy got to do something about this student loan stuff. Mercy got to do something with how do people get back on their feet? If a person mess up, what do you do to get back on your feet? Mercy got to figure out what in the world are we going to do with this healthcare stuff? You and I wait with bated breath to see does this healthcare reform stuff do what it promises to do. It's my prayer that it does, because what we had definitely wasn't working. It's too many people in America, one of the richest nations in the world, walking around hurting because they don't have money to pay for health care, don't have money to pay for medicine, don't have money to pay for procedures. I said somewhat humorously, but I'm very serious, even something as simple as dental care. And you know, middle class folk that got good insurance, you don't even think about this stuff. Your tooth hurt, you just go to the doctor, tell the man, look, this is hurting right here. He run the x-ray, he said, well, look, I don't think we can put no filling in that. Sound like you might need a crown on that. So what we want to do is we just want to get all that decay out of there, and then we want to put some medicine on it, and we just need to put a crown on that so we can save the tooth. And we tell the dentist, man, just go on, do what you got to do. That's what middle-class folk with good insurance do. When you poor, they don't even talk to you about no devilish crown. Your options are, we're going to put one of those great big silver fillings on that tooth right there, or we're going to pull that tooth out of your head. And how many of y'all know when you pull one out, it oftentimes messes up the alignment of the other teeth? And then when you pull two teeth, that's really messing you up. And my Lord, if you don't like to floss, if you don't like to brush your teeth in the morning and at night, which is, you know that's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to just brush your teeth one time a day. You got to wash, brush your teeth twice a day and learn how to floss. Just pull it on up there. But remember, when I do that, it just be hitting my gum. It's going to get better. Just keep on going. Trust me, that little bit of blood you get when you floss, that's better than having your tooth out your head. And so have you ever wondered why when you drive down Reading Road, you see folk in their 20s, 30s, 40 years old, and all their mess is gone? Because they ain't got no money to go. So when you got insurance, you just tell them, man, look, give me an implant. I can't be walking around here with three teeth missing right here, man. That's too conspicuous. I mean, if it's the wisdom tooth, cool. But you can't have three teeth missing right here on the front of my mouth, man. Give me some implant. Let's just screw that up in there. Here's my insurance. What? I owe you $400 deductible? Cool. Here we go. This is a middle class conversation. Poor folk don't even have these options. And so from 20 and 30 years old, your teeth are missing. And I'm suggesting mercy and justice ought to get together and bridge some of these gaps. I close now, so I hope y'all felt good last week. This was the thinking sermon. Last week was the feel-good sermon. We'll see what next week brings. But you really need to be thinking through a theological lens as this election comes along. So not only then does God, notice this is not a Democratic or an Obama or a Republican or even a political presentation. God is the one who says, I require, I demand, this is the expectation. I need my people to act justly, do justice work, to love mercy. And the only way you're going to do it over time is in the third clause. You got to learn how to walk humbly with your God, because you don't have enough power to do it by yourself. If you do justice work because you are the utopian dreamer, Reverend, if we work hard enough and pray hard enough, then we're going to change this world into a world where everybody's just going to get along. Baby, that's going to be hard to do. It's hard to get Christians to get along. I don't know how in the world you're going to get Christians, non-Christians, Jew, Gentile, the gay, the straight, all of the different sophistication and complexities, how diverse our community is becoming. No, that's not my hope, that we're going to learn how to get along. My hope is that God knows what he's doing. The reason why we pursue these kind of values of justice and mercy is not because of optimism in humanity, it's because of our faith in God. We believe that if I just do what God say do, God is going to take care of me. And so, no, our hope is not in no Obama. Our hope is not in no Democratic Party. It's not in the Republican Party. It's not even in the political system. Our hope is not even in democracy. Our hope is in a God who transcends all human structures. And we do it with humility, because we don't know what kind of twists and turns we will encounter on this road. But we do it with great confidence that our God, and look at that personal pronoun, it is not just walk humbly with God, but it's walk humbly with your God. That pronoun makes me raise the question, are you right with God? It's another way of saying, are you saved? Because you know you can be in church and appreciate the preparation for this message and not be saved. You better make sure you saved. And the only way to be saved is through Jesus and his blood. But if you are saved, I got marvelous news for you. No matter who wins the election, we still got hope in the Lord. The same God who can take Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon and do a righteous work, the same God who can take Cyrus from a Gentile nation and do a marvelous work, surely he's able to do a marvelous thing today with whoever he chooses. Do not take this as an excuse for irresponsibility. Every believer ought to go vote and vote best you can. But at the end of the day, our hope is not in that candidate. Our hope is in the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And he can be trusted, with early voting being less than 48 hours away from here. Anybody know you can trust him? Does anybody know you can trust him? I do not want you to be surprised. I do not want you to be surprised. If Obama wins the election, you remember, Obama is a human being. I haven't met one who doesn't falter sometime. If Obama wins, he will win the presidency, not the monarchy, which means you don't just say, so let it be written, so let it be done. Whole lot of things got to line up in America for anything to get done around here. And therefore, if I was you, I would urge you to lift your eyes beyond the poll, beyond the White House, even beyond the hills, to God, from which cometh our help. He can be trusted. to work things out in times like these. Would you stand? The invitation is extended. If things are not well between God and yourself, today is a marvelous day to say yes, Lord. It would be dangerous.